Chapter 14. The next morning they awoke before dawn, and while they had broken their fast and armed themselves, Rondal scried the area. Once he was sure there were no goblins still in the neighbourhood, he sent most of the men back to Manamore. He kept behind only Tyndall, Alwer, and Belsey, whom he continued to refer to as Lady Arcella. No need to explain more than he had to of the mission to his men. Tyndall had selected their mounts and saw to their saddles. He had chosen good coursers, as opposed to chargers, horses with good endurance and good speed. They were not going into battle, but they might end up fleeing for their lives. A horse that was winded after half a mile was an invitation to death. Each of the knight's magi armed themselves with bow, quiver, and sword. Rondal added a wooden round shield to complement his mage blade, and traded his chainmail hauberk for a lighter leather coat of plates. He had a dagger and a few war wands in his belt. He kept his infantryman's helmet. Tyndall carried his mage blade slasher, of course, kept his heavier armor, and took a horseman's javelin as a secondary weapon. Alwer was apparently adept as a bowman, and carried an 18-inch long dagger at his belt. He had eagerly traded his ragged tunic for a heavy gambeson from the manor's armory, and covered it with an archer's wax leather cuirass. To that, he'd added a steel helmet. He looked far more confident in the armor, and grateful for the chance to help. Belsey carried her crossbow, and now had a full complement of darts for the weapon, and a long, heavy dagger. She, too, had taken a padded gambeson and an archer's jerkin. She looked less confident. In fact, she looked at the brink of anguish. "Hardly the stuff of legends," Rondal frowned. "We write our own legends," Tyndall shot back. "Come on, let's go, before this goat wakes up." The two parties split up, the smaller heading cross-country over fields to save time and avoid the roads. They stopped repeatedly to scry ahead and check their bearings, and did not talk much in the saddle. Rondal could tell Alwer kept casting suspicious glances in Belsey's direction, and for her part, the lass was doing her best at avoiding discussion of any sort. They made good time. At noon, they stopped in an abandoned village and ate some hard tack and smoked beef before they got back in the saddle. By early afternoon, they started to see signs of goblin activity. They stopped at a crossroads where the unmistakable litter of goblin troops was thrown casually within the ruins of a burned-out hovel next to the road. A couple of rotted skeletons lay in heaps nearby. "This is where we first saw them," Tyndall explained in a near whisper as they examined a fork in the road. "The left-hand path heads to that manor or castle they've taken over. This is where I found that poop." "The poop is gone," Rondal observed. "Count yourself fortunate," Tyndall said. "As impressive a poop as it was." Rondal studied the road. "Is this the only way to the manor?" "No, there's another road that comes from the southwest," he said, shaking his head as he deployed his mage map. "But I'd bet they have both ways guarded." He studied the map for a moment. "But, you know, those scrugs don't think about rivers the same way we do." "What do you mean?" asked Alwer. He was an intelligent peasant, Rondal had found, but unimaginative. "I mean that they think of roads as means of transit, but they don't think that way about rivers. They are not fond of boats. There's this stream that runs right into the village and past the manor. I'm thinking that they won't be watching that as closely, and that will make it harder for those damned dogs of theirs to track us." "I can see that," agreed Rondal, "but I don't think all four of us are going to be able to make it without detection," he said skeptically, "and the water will slow us down. So we leave our assistants back here with the horses, ready to come get us if things get hairy," reasoned Tyndall. "You mean leave Alwer, the insurgent fighter, together, alone, with the woman who conspired to murder him?" asked Rondal, skeptically. Tyndall grinned. "Exactly. What could possibly go wrong? I know why you did this," he added unexpectedly. "What? Brought Lady Baggage along on a combat mission. What? Oh, why did I do that?" Rondal asked, genuinely curious. "Because she might die, or Alwer might die, or they might both die, or best yet, you might die, and then you would be spared the task of deciding her fate. You seem awfully cheerful about such a dangerous mission on which you might die as well." "Me?" Tyndall dismissed. "Not likely. I'm a survivor. Besides, someone is going to have to tell this sordid tale." "I'd appreciate this sordid tale dying a quiet death," Rondal said, shaking his head. But let's put the lady aside for a moment. You ready to wade up that creek? As hot as it is, and as long as it's been since I've had a bath? Tyndall said as the early autumn sun pounded down on them. I'm rather looking forward to it. They explained their plan to the other two, but neither was happy about it. My lord, I'll follow orders, Alwa said to Tyndall, but she's done tried to slay me once. By proxy, soothed Tyndall, and her plot was exposed. She has given her parole. And if a goblin patrol happens by? Asked the big peasant as he knocked an arrow. Hide, suggested Tyndall. Failing that, run. Failing that, fight. I'm honoured my lord has favoured us with his brilliant martial guidance, grumbled Alwa, looking around nervously. I'm not going to hang with my arse out at this crossroad, though. Too open and exposed. I'll make for that grove over there, he decided. Should give us good cover, but enough to still see the road and screen us from scouts, in case we have to employ any of that stunning military strategy my lord has gifted us with. I knew you'd understand, Alwa, Tyndall said cheerfully. He glanced up at Belsie. And there is one advantage of having her with you, he added. If the goblins find you, you just need to be faster than she is. You are the epitome of chivalry, Sir Tyndall, Belsie said sarcastically. There is nothing unchivalrous about giving good counsel, he chuckled. And the same could be said for you. Be faster than he is. Now you two play nicely, he chided playfully, as the two commoners exchanged disgusted looks with each other. He handed the reins of his horse over to them, first removing several weapons and adjusting the armour he wore. Rondal did the same. This was a scouting mission, not a combat mission. Metal armour made noise, and while it could save your life, it could also endanger it. Wading through a stream made it doubly foolish. He debated taking his shield. It was bulky, but he was reluctant to leave it behind. He'd looted the round shield from Faroon's great hall. It was an aberration among the finery, a genuine tool of war instead of a ceremonial trophy weapon. He had found it hung high and out of sight in the rafters. It was not a tournament shield, with some lord's device barely scuffed from use. It had seen battle. It was well made, the planks fitting cunningly together in a well-crafted concave design, 30 inches across and banded with iron. The thick leather strap and solid wooden handle were worn from use, but only somewhat brittle with age. It was light, weighing only 15 pounds. He barely felt it on his arm. There were notches and gouges in the face, but no weapon had ever pierced it. A good, solid infantry shield, as much a weapon as armour in the right hands. Rondal had no idea how it had gotten there, but he took it, knowing he could discard it at need. It was heavy to port such a ways, but he felt safer with it, and more able with sword and shield than just a mage blade. Their bows were short, utilitarian weapons taken from the armory of Faroon, and each bore a score of arrows. Tyndall had abandoned his steel cap and had tied a band around his forehead instead to keep his hair out of his eyes. Rondal kept his. After seeing their uncomfortable comrades to the grove Alwa had chosen, the two magi cautiously walked their horses up the road before turning aside and cutting across the open fields. Once they got to the creek, they tied the horses and scried the area heavily. They've got it warded up tight, Rondal said warily. You don't think you can handle it? Tyndall asked, part challenge and part question. Of course I can handle it, Rondal snapped. The Magradal was sliced right through them. The Magradal was the traditional countermeasure against wardings on the battlefield. It wasn't sophisticated, but it was effective. Once employed, the wardings it targeted would be nullified. Walking through them would not alert the shaman or priest who had strung them, theoretically. The Magradal? Asked Tyndall, skeptically. Don't you think they've found a counter by now? So what do you suggest? Rondal challenged. You didn't disagree with a command decision unless you had an alternative. I'd say Rawin's helm. Rawin's... I don't even know that one. I do, Tyndall said smugly. Picked it up in Raylan Kor while you were off camping. That burned. And what, precisely, is Rawin's helm? You know how the Magradal and the other counterspells are designed to drop the wards or cancel them? Rawin's helm doesn't disturb the wards. It just shields the mage from their effects. You don't register as a human being, he emphasized. To the shamans, you're just a squirrel or a bird or something. How does it do that? Rondal asked skeptically. It temporarily changes your shroud, he explained. That's what most wardings are tuned to detect. But most are also designed not to make you come running every time a robin builds a nest. So, we look like birds, he said matter-of-factly. Rondal considered. He'd heard of the spell, and the thaumaturgy was sound. But, have you ever cast it before? Me? No, snorted Tyndall. Haven't had the need to, until now. And you think a reconnaissance mission into a heavily armed and fortified enemy installation is the perfect time to do so? Asked Rondal patiently. If one has the courage, challenged Tyndall. Rondal stared at him. That burned too. All right, conceded Rondal. Do it. What? Cast the spell. On both of us, he reminded. If you say it's a better spell, I'll yield to your judgment. Why? Tyndall asked, as if he was mystified by Rondal's behavior. Because a good commander learns to trust the advice of his counselors, explained Rondal. If you think it's such a good spell, let's stake both of our lives on it. Ron? Tyndall asked cautiously as he studied him. Are you well? Because I took one of your suggestions, he asked angrily. Well, yeah, admitted the taller boy as he prepared to cast the spell. You hate taking my suggestions. Sometimes they aren't bad. I'm not going to insist I have the only answer to a problem, he declared. I'm here to get a job done. If I let my personal feelings get in the way of that, I've left the path of wisdom, and will probably get us both killed. So, why is it such a problem to let your personal feelings get in the way? Do you really hate me that much? Rondal was silent. This was not the conversation he wanted to be having now. What did I ever do to you? Tyndall asked. It was such a simple statement, and it had been delivered in such a heartfelt way that Rondal knew there was no duplicity or cynicism behind the question. It wasn't an accusation, he realized. It was an actual, earnest question. Rondal looked at him, his jaw slack. You don't know? What? Know what? Well, since you essentially blamed me for Astasia's death, Rondal said, much more quietly than he intended, I figured that we had an issue between us. Blamed you for Astasia's death? Tyndall asked, amazed. He stopped and faced Rondal, his mouth still open. You think I blamed you for her death? Well, that's the meaning that matches the words that fell out of your mouth, Rondal reasoned angrily. So yes, I was under that impression. And all this time, you thought I meant that. You seemed pretty serious about it at the time. Doing Harry Sacron! I just watched the girl die, and then killed the man who did it, he said angrily. After losing my stone and getting reamed in my exams, I wasn't exactly thinking clearly. You didn't exactly apologize. You didn't exactly stick around long enough for me to. What in nine hells was I supposed to do? Ron demanded in a harsh whisper. Beg your forgiveness? Wait for you to remove your head from your arse long enough to discuss it? Or did you mope and stomp around like... Oh, forget it, Tyndall said in a hoarse whisper. I can't believe you all this time. Listen, he said, staring into Rondal's eye with such intensity that it made him uncomfortable. I know full well that there are only two people to blame for Astasia's death, and neither one of them are us. I put one in the ground, he said viciously, and I am conspiring to do the same to Pratt. If anything, I owe you a debt for all you did to recover my stone. I don't blame you for her death at all. Really? Rondal asked. It was as if a great weight was lifted from his chest. You don't? Hells no! It was an accident. Well, it wasn't, but it certainly wasn't your fault. Who could have thought that Galdon was in league with Pratt? That took me utterly by surprise. Alas, it did poor Astasia as well. If I said I blamed you, I'm sorry. Damn, I'm sorry. Ishi's tits. That's what's been bothering you this whole time? He repeated in disbelief. It was a pretty serious accusation, Rondal said simply. Why didn't you just drop it now? Rondal ordered. Right before we sneak up on a bunch of sleepy goblins is not the time for a heartfelt discussion. Once Tyndall finished casting the spell, Rondal followed with a spell of silence and another one of unnoticeability. He slung his shield on his back and drew his bow. Tyndall did likewise. They travelled in silence for 200 yards, following the creek upstream towards the castle. As castles went, it was modest from a distance. Only the tallest of the towers along the wall could be seen over the trees as they approached. As they came closer, they saw that the walls were manned, or goblined, as the case was. Squint-eyed sentries peered uncomfortably into the sun-filled daylight, repeatedly shading their eyes and staving off yawns. Their spells held, Rondol was happy to note, as none of the sentries on the walls noticed them, though some, he felt, had looked right at them. They finally climbed down the embankment and walked through the centre of the creek until they came to within a bowshot of the wall, where a rickety bridge crossed the creek. There was no sentry on the bridge, they were happy to see, but they also noted that the bridge itself was heavily warded. Had they crossed over it, instead of under it, they would have quickly alerted their foe if they hadn't been protected. Instead of lingering near the bridge, they went another 50 feet and then crawled up the other bank, using the side of the ditch as cover as they tried to peer inside. "Do you think we could scry inside the walls?" Tyndall asked, mind to mind. "Not one bit. They have it protected. Besides, I want to put eyes on whatever it is they don't want seen." The gatehouse to the fortified manor, technically a castle, Rondol decided, was occupied by a band of Gavanni, decked out in captured Gilmoran finery and gilded armor more suited to jousting than guarding. Most of them were asleep, sprawled out all over the cool stones of the gatehouse. Two actually leaned on spears, and one almost seemed awake.
"Kefni Castle is under new management. So, do we just come up to them and tell them we're collecting for Trigg's Temple houses for crippled children and ask for a donation?"
Rondol wasn't paying attention to the guards, not really. He wanted to avoid the guards, asleep or not. He could tell his fellow wanted to fight, but that's not what this mission was about. Instead, he scanned the walls. There were sentries there, but they seemed more concerned with looking inside, not outside. And there was one section of the castle that seemed abandoned. On the far east side, Rondol observed, an outrigger square tower, part of an older section of the castle, had been unoccupied due to its ruined condition. The top of the tower was missing, and the side gaped open, the result of some calamity.
"Tyndall, wouldn't you say that was a lord's refuge?" he asked, mind to mind.
"That? An old one, maybe," he conceded. "Back when this place was really about defence and not topiary. Why? One important feature of a lord's refuge is usually the escape route it provides the lord's family," explained Rondol. "The point was you could escape to it from several points in the castle, or escape from it to several points in the castle, usually by an underground tunnel. Don't you think the Gavanni know about that sort of thing?"
"No, not really. They've only been around our fortifications for a year or two.
I'm guessing if you weren't aware of that after attending Raylan Kaur, most of them might be ignorant as well."
"You really can be an ass sometimes," Tyndall complained.
Rondol smiled as he moved quietly toward the ruined tower. He considered it a compliment, coming from someone in the profession. The tower had apparently been abandoned long before the goblins took residence, from the empty state of its interior. But the section of wall that connected it to the rest of the castle was still intact. A few boards were nailed over the big wooden door to keep anyone from wandering inside. No doubt the door at the other end was likewise secured, if not bricked over entirely. Tyndall began doing a simple scanning of the stone floor of the tower without being asked, and they soon found a stairwell down to the basement. Once used for storing a little bit of everything, the litter and debris of a century of castle life had been scattered haphazardly around.
"Here," Tyndall whispered harshly,
outlining a section of stone wall under the staircase.
"The stones all around this section aren't really mortared in. It's just for show. How do we open it? I thought you were the expert with stone."
Sighing, Rondol took a thoughtful look at the possible doorway and had to agree. There was a passageway concealed there. Sending his consciousness through the rock, he could detect the great iron hinge that hung the heavy door. In a few moments, the great piece of iron had rusted away to nothing under his spellwork. The door fell into the passageway behind it by 6 inches. With both of their shoulders on it, they were able to force it open enough to admit them into the stale-smelling tunnel.
"Mage light?" Tyndall asked.
"Cat's eye," ordered Rondol, and both of them cast the spell that allowed them to see in the dark. A mage light might shine through and reveal them somehow. They slung their bows and drew their swords. Rondol and his shield in front as they went single file down the ancient tunnel. Along the way they came to a chamber off to the side. Not much, but enough of a space to harbour a sheaf of spears and a few iron helms. Just beyond it was a heavy and defendable door, which, luckily, stood open. They moved carefully through and continued up a narrow flight of stairs. At the top, the passageway led right, left, and forward.
Which way?
Straight, Rondol decided. No particular reason why. As luck would have it, the passageway Rondol had chosen led into the base of one of the towers that ringed the inner bailey of the structure, and into a hidden chamber. There were three separate doors, each concealed from the other side.
These Gilmoran lords dearly love their hidden passageways, Rondol chuckled.
They're for all the whores and mistresses, remarked Tyndall.
Hey, can you see out of that one?
The door that led to the bailey did indeed have a gap next to it that allowed them to see out. Whatever decorative feature on the other side was so deeply cut that it could not be discerned as a fissure. As a result, they could see a great deal of what was going on inside the castle. The sight was horrific. Clustered in groups of a score were human slaves, bound neck and hands together, men, women, and children. Almost all lacked shoes, and many had only a few scraps of clothing left. Everyone was sporting wicked-looking whip scars on their backs, arms, and faces. Among them toiled a few who brought water around to them, giving each but a few sips before they continued to the next.
They're almost dead of dehydration,
Rondol told Tyndall when he used his mage sight to get a better look.
Look at them,
the way they watch the slave with water. That's how they keep them docile. Give them just enough water to keep them cowed. There were guards among them too, mostly mangy-looking Gervani, many of them in tribal gear or captured armor, carrying clubs and whips. A few had spears, and all carried knives or short swords. Among them were a few humans who walked freely, if deferent to the goblins. Collaborators, slavers, traitors.
I think the whippings and summary executions might play a role too, Tyndall pointed out sarcastically. Dehydration keeps them weak. Fear and pain keep them docile.
How many are out there? They each counted, and then counted again. Over 200 within their sight alone.
It seems a shame to leave them there, all tied up like that. Tyndall said.
We're not here to rescue them, we're here to observe,
reminded Rondol.
I'd like to save them too, but there are just two of us.
So?
There's a lot more of them. They taught us at War College that's a bad move.
So is this what the goblins were trying to hide?
Slaves?
We knew about their slaving operations.
None of them looked capable of dropping a load as big as the one I saw. Maybe that plump burger on the end, but
we need a better view, sighed Rondol,
turning away from the hole.
Where do these other doors lead?
This one?
Likely to the chamber beyond, answered Tyndall, crossing to peer through its hidden viewport.
The place is filled with sleeping slaves.
It looks like a banquet hall they're using as a pen.
How many?
Another 100, maybe?
Tied hand to hand. The main door looks locked from the outside.
This one is behind a tapestry, I think.
Rondol was peering through the third door.
This one is more stairs. Going down.
I think it leads to another tunnel. Probably into the keep, he reasoned.
That sounds like an excellent vantage point,
Tyndall agreed.
You know, this sneaking around stuff is kind of fun.
It's one of the reasons War Magi make such expensive but useful mercenaries. They followed the stairs back down, and then through a tunnel at least 50 feet long, narrow and close on all sides. Rondol eventually had to sling his shield and move sidewise. It narrowed so much. At last it came to a narrow passageway straight up, accessed by a stout wooden ladder.
They must have designed this as the Lord's escape route,
Rondol said excitedly as he began to climb the ladder.
Like Arcella's hidey hole.
Belsey, reminded Tyndall.
I knew her for weeks as Arcella,
Rondol shot back. Give me some time to adjust.
Touchy.
You really shouldn't irritate the man climbing the ladder above you, Rondol pointed out.
Gravity is a cruel mistress. Just don't fart and nobody will get hurt.
Rondol didn't respond. He kept climbing. Three stories of ladder led to the summit of the keep. The topmost rooms were reserved as the chamber of the lord and lady, as well as the living quarters of the senior servants. It was deserted now, the bedchamber thoroughly looted and destroyed. But it was empty. Rondol pushed the hidden door open from the inside,
and a section of wall gave way. The top floor was deserted. There was no sign of goblin encampment here.
"They don't particularly like heights," Tyndall reminded him. "The watchtower over in the Outer Bailey is taller, so they'll have their look out there. You can't see much beyond the walls from here.
But you can see just about."
"Good gods eternal! What the hell's is that?"
He pointed out one of the arrow slits in the ruined chamber at what Rondell first thought was a rickety redoubt on a hill of dirt. Then it moved. It was a beast, a gigantic beast, easily 50 feet long from blunted snout to thick tail. 6 giant squat legs, as thick as the thickest tree Rondell had ever seen, supported the beast. The redoubt Rondell had seen was in fact a kind of saddle fortress, a covered platform that could be filled with warriors in battle, creating a walking castle. The redoubt was situated just behind the second pair of legs, and secured with broad straps and ropes. Empty at the moment, Rondell was appalled to see. In addition to the platform for archers, some sort of cunning mechanism on the roof, he guessed, was a compact sort of ballistae or catapult.
That thing is a walking siege, Tyndall finally said.
What the hell is it?
I've never even heard of something like this before. It's like a leggy worm, only that snout. It's got a thick plate of horn or bone or something on it.
Like a living battering ram, agreed Rondell.
How long would it take to go through a castle gatehouse with that?
A lot less time than it would take to attack with trolls or scrugs, agreed Tyndall, darkly.
Shit, Ron. What does that thing eat?
I don't see any fodder around, Rondell said, scanning the courtyard below. Then he realized the awful truth when the great beast yawned.
Oh, never mind. Look at those teeth, he said.
Its head was like a huge alien tortoise. The teeth it revealed were sharp, pointed, and numerous.
I'm guessing it's carnivorous, and I bet it eats people. That's why they haven't moved these poor bastards north yet. They're supplying their siege worms.
That's horrible, Rondell said, shaking his head. Tyndall looked at him.
Feel different about a rescue mission now?
Rondell stared at him. His mission was accomplished. They knew what the goblins were hiding and why. It would only take a moment to alert Commander Tellerman, mind to mind, and then they could return. Only that would leave the hundreds of people below to die in the jaws of that hideous beast.
Gods, I hate you sometimes,
Rondell said, shaking his head.
Just keeping you on the path of chivalry. How do you propose we take on...
Trig only knows how many goblins. At least a shaman, possibly more. There could always be a couple of trolls hiding out in the cellar, and at least a dozen vile remnants of humanity who are collaborating with the enemy.
Oh yes, a 50-foot-long death machine that seems to eat people?
Easy, Tyndall smiled. Remember, there are 2 of us. Every castle and manor house had a cistern, and most had many. As much as a castle relied upon a well within the walls of the bailey to slake the thirst of the besieged, in dire circumstances, when a retreat to a tower or keep was necessary, it became important to ensure a temporary supply. Kefni Castle was no different. In fact, the 3rd tallest tower overlooking the inner bailey had a large one, at least 1,000 gallons, fed by rainwater and magically protected from stagnation. It was at the center of the topmost floor of the tower, a chamber of rock lined with clay. But cisterns needed to be emptied and repaired from time to time, and a drain 1 foot wide led to the inner bailey for that purpose. Rondell had let himself be persuaded to approve of Tyndall's plan, mostly because of the profound distraction the sudden appearance of that much water to that many people, so close to being mad with thirst, would produce. There were guards enough to handle a few isolated incidents of resistance among the humans huddled around their knees. If several hundred of them all went into action at once, they would be hard-pressed to keep control of the situation. And once an angry siege worm was loosed on the scene, well, Rondell couldn't deny that whatever mayhem and destruction it wrought was no less than the goblins deserved. While he knew that some people would inevitably get killed in the fight, that was a better fate for them than being worm fodder. Tyndall had volunteered to make his way quietly across the rooftops of the manor over to the tower, which was taking enough time so that Rondell was able to make a brief report, mind to mind, to Tellerman while he waited. The military commander was surprised and disheartened by the news of the siege worms, but he took the news coolly. When he was done with the conversation, Rundell checked in with Tyndall, who was still slowly creeping across the rooftops, trying not to be seen.
"It's going to be at least another half hour," he reported. "There are more sentries on the back side of the keep, and I'm trying to avoid them. See if you can keep yourself busy until I get there."
"By doing what?" "I left my embroidery back at the manor," he replied sourly.
"What about contacting those other prisoners, the ones in the banquet hall, and arming them with those siege spears we saw in the tunnel, and maybe getting the women and children out through the secret passage? That might be a better use of your time than needlepoint. Just do it quietly."
That's not a bad idea, actually," Rundell admitted. He hated when Tyndall was right. He looked through the squint hole into the banquet hall turned prison, and with his cat's eye spell he was able to see dozens of bodies crammed into the room. A few were pressed up against the wall, so when he did finally release the catch on the concealed door, two poor souls spilled into the hidden compartment, squeaking in surprise.
"Shh," Rundell said insistently. "I'm here to help rescue you, but you must be silent."
"What?"
asked one dull-witted fellow.
"Is it my turn for the beastie now?"
"I'm here to rescue you,"
Rundell repeated, looking to the other man, a younger, scrawny fellow who looked like he'd been beaten a few times, where he found more wit looking back.
"I'm Sir Rundell of Sevendor. I'm under the command of King Rad," he said, hoping invoking the new monarch's name would grant him some authority with the half-mad prisoners.
"Is there a leader among you?" he asked, hopefully.
"Aye, my lord,"
the skinny man nodded.
"I'll go fetch him. Silently,"
Rundell insisted. He waited patiently with the thicker fellow, shushing his every attempt to make a sound. Soon three more men stumbled back through the darkness and into the hidden chamber. One was a tall, bearded man of noble bearing, the other a shrewd-looking, hawk-nosed fellow in sturdy garments. Neither looked as distressed as the first two prisoners he'd encountered.
"I'm Sir Rundell of Sevendor," he said in a whisper. "I've come to try to help."
"I am Sire Darduin of Rum," said the bearded man. "This is Master Gil the Weaver. We keep things in order," he said. "How many are you?"
"Not many," Rundell admitted, "but they know not that we are here. There is a passageway leading out of the castle. I want you to quietly, silently, gather the women, children, old and sick, and file them down into the passage. Have them gather in the ruined tower, but they should make no move out of it until our diversion occurs. Then they should run south for their lives. I'm afraid I don't have any advice beyond that. We're too few to give you any aid, but we can give you a chance at escape."
"Duin's axe, that's all we have prayed for," Sire Darduin said fervently.
"The guards check on us every hour," reported Master Gil. "They made their last check only 10 minutes ago, but some of our fellows are half mad with hunger and thirst. We must be careful lest they alert our jailers."
"What about the wounded?" Rundell asked.
"There are few," admitted Sire Darduin grimly. "When someone gets hurt, they become the next meal for that horror out there."
"We saw it,"
nodded Rundell.
"Children?"
"Only a few. They took most of them away when we first arrived. But we will get the non-combatants to safety first. I just fear discovery if we make too much noise."
"I can cure that," Rundell said. "Lead me to this door."
Making their way gingerly through the crowded hall, around moaning and wretched bodies, who watched him with the dazed expression that told him they knew not whether he was real or phantom, he came to the great wooden double doors that in better days had made a jolly and homey entrance to this hall. Now the polished wood was hacked and pitted and bloodied, barred from the outside. Rundell first cast a silencing spell that would permit no noise to pass beyond the door. Then he spellbound it with a simple cantrip, not enough to stand up to a counterspell, but easily enough to prevent someone opening the door without one.
"All right, let's get them moving," Rundell said in a louder voice, once he was done.
"Sire Darduin, there is a cache of siege spears down that passageway. Can I trust you to select the 20 men best able to use them and return to this hall?"
"To what purpose? And what did you do to the door?"
"I am a knight mage," Rundell explained dismissively. "I spellbound it and proofed it against sound. We have a little time and freedom now."
He realized something was bothering him. He took his water bottle from his pack and handed it to the knight, who gratefully took a swallow, but only one, and passed it to the weaver, who did likewise.
"If we can get a few stalwarts with spears here to act as a rearguard, we can ensure your people have the best chance to escape."
"In addition,"
he said cagily. Once our diversion begins, it may be helpful to suddenly have an organized force to deploy against them. He looked at the knight and the weaver appraisingly. Can I count on you gentlemen to lead that force? They conferred quietly but quickly. I will lead the spears, declared Darduin, while Master Gil will lead the prisoners away, if that be permitted. I know a village nearby where we might hide through the night, he explained.
Good,
nodded Rondal. After that, make for the southern horizon. We have a hidden outpost at Maramore Manor, and we have a cache at Faroon Hall, so if you can make it to one of those places, we might be able to speed you further. But
a chance is all we ask for,
the weaver assured him. It took nearly 20 minutes to pass the word and get the prisoners sorted out, but things went more efficiently than Rondal had anticipated. Sire Darduin brooked no resistance to his authority, and Master Gil was persuasive and insistent. Between the two men and a few lieutenants, they had ushered the majority of the frightened people out of the wretched hall and into the escape prepared for them without detection. Meanwhile, some had been sent back for arms, and in addition to the spears, had brought out a few helmets, a few axes, knives, and other weapons they'd found roaming the other hidden passages. Rondal feared that one of them would inadvertently alert the foe, but that was an increasingly moot point. Tyndall was almost in position.
This is a lot harder than I thought it would be, he complained.
I'm trying to keep 100 thirst-crazed prisoners from rioting and organizing an escape, Rondal shot back. So glad that I gave you the difficult task.
The men who remained, willing to fight, were a mixed collection of peasants, tradesmen, and a few men-at-arms, many with some militia training or war experience. Sire Darduin detailed an older man to organize the makeshift squad, while Master Gil bid Rondal goodbye.
Can you use a bow? He asked suddenly.
Take mine, he offered, pushing it and his quiver into the weaver's hands.
I've plucked a few strings in my life,
the man said with amusement as he accepted the weapon. Thank you, Sir Rondal, and the blessing of Duin go with you. To Sire Darduin he gave his round shield, and the knight armed himself with a short axe someone had uncovered in the passageways. He looked valiant and grim as he swung the axe through the air a few times.
I thank you for giving me a chance to die on my feet like a man, he said quietly.
Those scrugs killed my wife in front of me and led me and my people away in chains. Would that I had died in that attack. Many a time I have prayed to Duin for one last opportunity to strike at them, and lo, the destroyer has heard my prayer. Rondal wasn't terribly comfortable being viewed as an agent of divine will, so he returned to more practical matters. He drew his mage blade and sketched out the situation on the other side of the door under a dim mage light, until the men felt they had a good grasp of what they faced. None looked particularly hale, but they all seemed enthusiastic. Since they were all probably about to die, that was probably fortunate, if foolish.
I'm in position, Tyndall finally reported. As soon as I catch my breath, I'll start. How are things looking down there?
While you were gaily skipping across rooftops, I made a couple of squads of light infantry. After you soak the courtyard, we'll wait until things get nasty. Then these fellows will attack whatever organized response they put together from an unexpected direction.
And then what?
That was a good question. What happened after they stirred this chamber pot of horrors into deadly chaos? A good plan usually has a point, he chided himself.
I'll look toward the prisoners, Rondal decided. You tackle that siege worm.
Me? There's just one of me.
And there's only one siege worm. What could be more glorious? Rondal shot back, amused.
You wanted a challenge. I didn't want a bloody suicide mission. Don't be such a baby.
I don't expect you to slay it. Just test it. See what it responds to, what its weaknesses are, what it is resistant to. Stuff that would be useful to know the next time we face one. That's a pretty big order.
That's the only kind knights magi get. Just try not to get yourself killed. Challenge it, test it, but don't try to kill it if it's too much problem.
Or do you want to trade positions and have me go after the worm? He challenged.
I can only guess that this is part of your elaborate plan to become senior apprentice, Tyndall said.
All right. I've caught my breath. I'm in position. I've got a wand pointed right at the wooden drain. The water? Well, it's cistern water. I'm guessing the dying prisoners won't be picky.
Wait for my order.
Yes, Commander.
Damn.
Rondal thought he almost sounded serious in his response.
"Prepare your men for action, sire," he told the axe-wielding knight. "When I give the word, charge out that door and slay every goblin in sight. Free other prisoners, arm them, and keep fighting until you're free."
"Duin's blessing go with you, Sir Rondal," the big knight called, as Rondal went back into the secret chamber, after lifting the spell binding from the banquet hall. He wanted to be able to provide better direction, and as much fun as leading a ragtag infantry squad into battle against desperate odds would be, he had other responsibilities. He took position behind the door that led to the bailey and peered out of the peephole. He could see the rump of the six-legged siege worm, huddled prisoners, sleepy goblins, sinister-looking human collaborators. He watched one of the cutthroats who had taken the dead god's coin to war against his own kind look appraisingly over one knot of prisoners, mostly women, tied up in front of what was once the castle's herb house. A nasty, rat-like man with a hooked nose looked over the prisoners before selecting one, a young woman who looked so dazed with thirst she did not know what was happening. With a leering eye, he forced her to her feet, his intentions clear.
"Now," Rondal said to Tyndall, without thinking, "do it now."
It seemed to take hours for anything to happen. The rat-like man was almost out of sight. The poor girl he'd taken as his prize led away like a dog, when a rumble and geyser from the drainway began spilling a torrent of water down into the bailey, over the heads of some surprised prisoners, and within sight of all the rest.
"There," he heard Tyndall report, "if that's all you require of me, go fight your worm," Rondal ordered. "As soon as you're able to get free, cut out. I'll meet you back where we left the horses."
The sudden appearance of life-giving water had the desired effect. Already there was a riot brewing in the bailey, he could see through the port. The prisoners who were not directly under the spout saw the water and went mad. Ignoring the guards, the goblins, the worm, even their own ponds, they surged toward the unexpected blessing with incredible force and speed. People were shouting with joy and terror as the bewildered guards frantically tried to keep order. The human confederates shrank back against so many of their fellows, and a few of the prisoners took advantage of the chaos to strike down their captors. But most continued toward the water, even as it splashed across the bailey toward them. It only took moments for the goblin guards to wake their sleeping comrades, and soon fresh troops were pouring in from the gatehouse and various dens around the castle. A line of them formed behind the crowd, directly in front of the door where the newly armed former prisoners awaited.
"Attack!" Rondal shouted at the men.
They opened the door and charged out, spears held ready, and crashed into the back of the goblin line with a savage growl. The freed prisoners fought ferociously, stabbing and slashing with their spears like fanatics. More came behind them, arming themselves and other prisoners from the fallen goblins. As the Givani turned to face this unexpected threat, Rondal realized that he was in a very good position to attack their flank, all by himself. He pushed the concealed door open. It had been so long since it had been used, he had to put his shoulder behind it hard, but it soon swung open, spilling him into the bright courtyard. All around him there were screams and tumult, and the smell of blood was starting to linger in the air as the battle to his left matured. There were over a score of freed prisoners armed well enough to give fight to the confused and increasingly panicked goblins. Rondal pointed his mage blade at the goblins lined up before him and threw a solid sheet of painful, magical force from it. The invisible spell lanced out from his sword point, and suddenly the bulk of them began to stumble and scream. While that was gratifying, it did little real damage. The damage was being done by thirst-crazed prisoners who were freeing and arming themselves and throwing themselves at their captors with vengeance in their eyes. Writhing in pain was a poor defensive posture, even against such poorly armed foes, and the goblins died quickly. Rondal continued to walk steadily through the tumult, his mage blade in one hand, a war wand in the other, doing what he could to help the prisoner uprising. A blast from a wand, or a timely slice with his blade, settled many contests, and the grateful victors were quick to distribute looted weapons to other prisoners. Twice he fought in protracted duels, once with a grim-faced human collaborator with an axe, and once with a snarling goblin warrior wielding a short, stabbing sword with impressive ferocity. In each case, he used an unexpected blast from wand or blade to end the contest. Just as he was wondering where Tyndall was, he heard a bravado-filled cry, and watched in horror as his fellow apprentice rappel down the tower he'd been safely in and leap onto the back of the siege beast. The great worm did not notice him in the slightest.
thanks to the distraction of a riot in front of it. The animal was dull-witted, either naturally or from domesticated service, but it wasn't unresponsive. Tyndall fell onto the upper torso of the thing, ahead of the empty wooden castle saddled on its back, and began firing at the goblin attendants desperately attempting to keep the creature from bolting. Then another knot of goblins charged, attempting to restore order with spear hafts and clubs against unarmed, starving and weakened prisoners. Rondal gave them a fully armed and armoured, well-fed and well-rested night mage to contend with instead. When the last body slipped from his blade, he looked up to see that his foes were getting themselves better organised. The thin, reedy horns the Givani favoured bellowed, summoning more reinforcements, and someone was gathering a force of them in front of the great hall. There were a score there already, and more were fleeing from individual engagements with the enraged prisoners to find safety in regrouping.
Tyndall, quit messing around, Rondal sent through their link. They're going to have those fell hounds in here shortly, and then they'll all be torn to shreds. What do you think I'm trying to do? Do they still hold the gatehouse?
Rondal spared a quick glance. The nearest organized, if that term could be used, band of prisoners was still hundreds of feet from the gatehouse, and it seemed to be held in force. The portcullis was down, and the drawbridge seemed to be up. Rondal could see dozens of little black furry figures inside, frantically trying to secure their station.
They still hold it, Rondal agreed. It's going to take a lot to get through that, too, he added, and we have fresh resistance pouring out from the Great Hall. Lovely. Well, I have an idea.
I'm terrified, Rondal said, parrying a quick blow that would have taken his knee, and then slicing neatly and efficiently through the goblin's neck.
What is it?
It occurs to me, Tyndall began, quoting a signature Sire K line, that we happen to have a fully operational siege beast here,
which you cannot control, Rondal pointed out. I won't need to, Tyndall explained.
Rondal watched as he ran up the beast's neck toward its head, where a goblin drover had managed to find a perch. A flash of light sent the goblin flying to his doom.
I just need to get it moving. If it can break into a castle, it can break out of one.
Rondal was about to object to the possibility of such mass carnage when he heard the baying of those foul hounds from behind the great hall.
Whatever you're going to do, do it quick, or we're looking at a really furry bloodbath. As you wish, Commander, Tyndall said.
Rondal could almost hear the cocky grin. A few moments later there was a pop, another flash, and a monstrous bellow that stopped the entire battle for a brief moment of terror.
I think I pissed it off, Tyndall said quietly in Rondal's mind. You tend to have that effect, agreed Rondal. Is it moving?
Before Tyndall could answer, the ground shook, and then shook again. The great beast strained against the chains that held it, until Tyndall helpfully blasted them. Then the huge lizard-like animal began pushing toward the front entrance of the castle, anxious to escape whatever it was that irritated it.
It's moving, Tyndall agreed, headed your way. I'd move if I were you. Everyone clear the way, Rondal bellowed in his best battlefield voice. Now!
Only a few of the prisoners heeded his warning at first, but the moment the siege beast's gigantic head loomed overhead, everyone, goblin and human alike, fled its path. Not all were lucky enough to do so, and the hideous monster left red-smeared footprints all the way across the courtyard.
Follow the beast out, commanded Rondal.
He looked over to the battered and bloodied knight, Sir Darduin, who had lost his axe, but kept his shield, and had liberated a cavalry sword from somewhere.
Sire, you are the rear guard. Get your men to keep the goblins from hindering our escape.
The knight wordlessly saluted to acknowledge the order, and turned to give some of his own. That was about the best Rondal could do, as he moved himself out of the way of the huge creature. Tyndall was still riding atop it, grinning maniacally and successfully keeping the goblin drovers from recapturing the worm. He waved from its back as he passed by Rondal, as if he was in a parade.
You had better get off that thing before it hits the gate, warned Rondal, as he directed more prisoners to follow the beast, not flee from it. I want to see what it does, protested Tyndall. We know what it does, countered Rondal. It smashes, crashes, and destroys. Or were you planning on seducing it, too? Tired of goats already? All right, grumbled the other wizard. I'm off of it now, about 10 yards from the gatehouse on the left. Join me.
I'll be there momentarily, he said, and turned back to Sir Darduin.
Lead them out through the breach, he instructed. Keep the goblins off of them until they're clear of the gate. Then run for your lives, south.
Thank you for the opportunity to avenge my kin, the knight said gravely. I shall never forget you, Sir Rondal.
Duin's blessing, Sire Dar Duin, Rondal said, clasping the older man's shoulder before he moved on. Tyndall was standing next to the gate as the beast demolished it in a blind, animalistic rage.
I've been irritating its hindquarters with magic, he explained. I kept thinking about that poop, and what would irritate a 3-feet-wide butthole. I figured that the tender parts wouldn't be armoured, and I was right. I gave it a nasty case of magically stinging rectum.
Well, if anyone knows how to be a pain in the ass, it's you, Rondal agreed. Tyndall ignored the jibe.
I think we've done everything we can here. We should be going.
The siege worm lunged aggressively against the gatehouse one final time, toppling the masonry and creating a breach large enough to escape through. A flood of terrified prisoners trailed behind, some stopping to finish off the Gavanni trapped by the rubble.
As soon as the gate is clear, Tyndall agreed. You lost your shield, he observed. Someone else needed it more than I, dismissed Rondal, and we'll travel faster without it. We bolt for the horses, then make our way back to Maramore. We need to make a full report of this to Commander Talaman.
This might help, Tyndall said, hefting an odd-looking contraption of beads, ropes, leather and bone.
This was the magical device controlling the beast, I think. We can learn a lot from it.
That was actually a really good idea, Rondal admitted as he looked around. The baying of the hounds was coming closer.
Stow it away, and help me think of a way to keep these curs off of our people.
Tyndall nodded, and obediently did as he asked. Rondal was amazed. No argument, no banter, no discourse on his shortcomings. Tyndall just did as he was ordered. Rondal struggled with that a moment. A year ago, that just would not have happened. He couldn't have said the sky was blue without getting an argument. Now he wasn't sure if the change had been wrought in Tyndall or in himself, but he was sure he liked it, even if he was uncomfortable with it. They elected to do a quick field of sigils, a variation of a simple spellmonger's enchantment to keep stray dogs out of chicken coops. With the power of 2 witch stones at their command, the effect was far more severe. When the squadron of Gavanni cavalry loped around the corner of the hall, they ran into the field and their canine mounts immediately began whining and howling, not chasing their prey with eagerness.
Let's get out of here, Tyndall said. It won't take long for them to find a way around that.
They climbed through the breach, dispensing advice and encouragement to the half-starved prisoners until they had cleared the debris-filled moat in the wake of the beast. The worm was plodding across country now, moving slowly but irresistibly east across the barren fields, trailing a few screaming Gavanni drovers who were desperately trying to bring their charge under control. The 2 young knights made good time once they reached the road. Most of the prisoners had fanned out and taken off cross-country now, so there was little to slow them down. Using war magic to improve their endurance and speed, they had made it back to where their horses were hidden without incident, when the baying of the fellhounds sounded again.
Looks like the bad puppy spell wasn't that effective, Tyndall said, discouraged, as he mounted. We're here, aren't we? And if it's any consolation, I doubt they pooped in the area of effect. The spell was a complete success. It was just not the best spell for the job. Let's not dally with experimentation today, all right?
Asked Tyndall, as they spurred their horses. I used the last charge on my last wand attacking that beast, and I lost Slasher.
Ouch!
Rondal winced. That's not going to please Master Min.
Neither would my corpse, I'm guessing. I picked up a sword on the way out from one of the collaborators, he said,
gesturing to the plain-hilted blade at his side. They wasted no more words as they sped toward where their friends were hidden, waiting for them. Unfortunately, before they could arrive there, the first of their pursuers were after them. The large dogs that made up the Gavanni cavalry were fast, and they moved in packs through terrain a horse would avoid. Each one had a small, vicious-looking goblin with a slashing spear or sword on its back, as well as being well-armed with tooth and claw. As they raced with his courser, he spared them quick glances to size up his foes. Tyndall noted with professional interest that they had a feral cunning in their small black eyes, unlike any dog or wolf he'd ever seen. Their fur was thick and matted, black and grey and brown, and their faces were squatter than the hounds of Sevendor.
Thick, sharp teeth protruded from their shaggy muzzles, fangs as cruel as daggers. And they were fast. Before they knew it, there was one dogging Rondal's left stirrup, trying to slash at his mount's legs with his spear. Rondal kicked him in the face with his boot and sent the goblin flying. The hound, however, kept up his pursuit until a quick thrust with his mage blade ended the chase. Another replaced him almost at once, weaving between them and going after Tyndall. Rondal tossed Tyndall a war wand and mentally told him the command word and mentioned it only had a single charge, and Tyndall blasted it and then threw the empty stick at the next mutt. There were half a dozen canines keeping pace behind them, snarling and baying. For a terrified moment, he was very sympathetic to the fox who was victim to the hunt. "We're not going to be able to keep this up forever," Rondal sent to Tyndall as they rode for their lives. Mind-to-mind communication was actually easier than shouting over the hoofbeats and pounding of his heart. "That's what they're counting on," Tyndall realized. "Horses can run a long way, but a dog pack can run in relays. You remember how the mountain wolves could chase a cow down? They must have bred wolves with those Minden's farm dogs," Rondal suggested. "They have the same bone structure and coloration. But those legs and tail, that's all wolf." "I hadn't noticed," Tyndall said dryly. "If we don't lose them soon, then the horses will leather. Then they'll slow, and then..." "I know. We need to break their chase. Any ideas?" "Magic? Anything more specific?" asked Rondal patiently, as he spurred his mount even faster. "Magic that works against dogs. Well, don't we know a few spells like that?" Rondal pointed out. Tyndall's smile told him he realized that his commander was right. They had learned plenty of spells concerning canines, not at Relincourt or even at Inarian Academy, but back in Beauval Vale when they were both spellmongers' apprentices. One of the mainstays of the rural spellmonger were enchantments to keep various types of livestock safely in their enclosures and pastures, and not wandering off to get eaten or poached or impounded by the stock warden. Among the arsenal of common spells every spellmonger knew were plenty to keep dogs from barking, keep them in their yards and lots, keep them from harassing the chickens or horses or goats, spells to keep them alert at night, spells to keep them pooping in convenient places, spells to make their noses better in the hunt, and spells to ward against strays, trespassers, and feral dogs. In fact, Tyndall realized, he had learned more about battling canines in his first 6 months as a mage than he'd learned in the 2 years since. And dog spells were relatively simple, because dogs were relatively simple. But which one to cast? He settled on a nameless spell used to distract and misdirect dogs away from areas they weren't allowed. Its mechanism involved convincing the dog in question that they were seeing something far more interesting elsewhere. Tyndall liked it because it was a nice blend of blue and brown magic, and elegant in its simplicity. Using a phantom rabbit to lure their pursuers from their trail seemed deliciously poetic for some reason. He summoned the power from his stone while he rode, which was simple, and then projected the symbols he needed to focus and tune the energy. An irresistible squirrel, it would seem to the dogs, just to the side of the pursuit. With a devilish grin, Tyndall glanced over his shoulder, targeted the largest of the hounds to focus the center of his spell upon, and then he activated the illusion. The effect was almost instantaneous. Suddenly the three dogs on their heels, their riders preparing to slash at their mount's legs, veered crazily to the east, almost 90 degrees from the road. The Gavanni squealed in protest, but the hounds were relentless. They abandoned the pursuit of the horses in favor of the juiciest rodent their minds could conceive of. "How's that?" Tyndall asked with a grin. "I'm impressed," Rondal grudgingly admitted. "How long do you think it will take for them to regain control?" "Not long," agreed Tyndall, reluctantly. "I wouldn't slow down the horses just yet." "Good idea," agreed Rondal, looking over his shoulder at the misdirected dogs. They continued galloping for another 5 minutes, covering a lot of road. They didn't slow until they came to a small bridge, unguarded, just before the turn toward the crossroad where they had left Belsey and Alwa. Tyndall hurriedly cast some protective spells to foul their pursuit while Rondal watered the horses. "Not much longer now," he observed when he led both steeds back to the bank. "Until we die a gruesome death," Tyndall remarked. "Probably, but we still have half a day's ride over hostile country before we get back to Maramore. If, that is, we've kept them off our trail. Let's go overland,
suggested Rondal. If we take the horses across and then skirt the other bank a few hundred yards, we should keep them guessing. We can cut through the fields and get to the crossroads without leaving much of a trail. They moved quickly, jumping the horses over ditches and the low stone walls that separated the fields here. They came to the road just a few hundred feet from the crossroads. The burned-out hovel that may have once been an inn was familiar, but there was no sign of their companions. When they got to the crossroad, Rondal dismounted and began scrying to locate them. They were going to hide in that grove, Tyndall reminded him, helpfully.
I know, Rondal said sullenly. Only they aren't there now.
What?
Scry for yourself, shrugged Rondal.
They aren't there.
Then where are they?
Tyndall asked anxiously.
They were supposed to be at the grove.
I don't know, snapped Rondal.
Let me... Oh, all right. I think they moved further up the road. Maybe 100, 200 yards.
Why? Demanded Tyndall.
Maybe the area got too crowded,
Rondal suggested, as he knelt in the dust of the crossroad. I'm a lousy tracker, but these are fresh.
He suddenly stood, his eyes wide in alarm as he searched the brush and ruin surrounding the crossroad.
If he recalled correctly, there was fresh litter strewn about the place, and the dust in the road did look freshly trod. He suddenly felt dozens of eyes on the back of his neck.
Ron?
Tyndall began, nervously, his hand moving to the hilt of his captured blade.
I can feel it,
Rondal confirmed. Probably an infantry patrol with a shaman covering for... He was interrupted by the twang of a bowstring and the whoosh of a black, fletched arrow with a jagged iron point whizzing within inches of his ear. Both knights turned to face their attackers, drawing their blades as they did so. More arrows flew, but thankfully, in the light of day, most goblins were poor shots with their short bows and their shafts fell short. The Gavani were starting to charge out of the brush next to the road, a half dozen with spears and bows, an infantry patrol, as Rondal had guessed. But there was indeed a shaman, one of the lowlier types, in the back, waving his hands and conspiring to do them harm. Tyndall spurred his horse to ride the Gervan down as Rondal invoked his combat magic and began slicing goblins apart. The moment his awareness stretched to take in the entire scene, he understood just how much trouble they were facing. Not just the shaman, but more than 24 goblins were springing from their hidden positions and rushing at them. He slashed adeptly through the throats of the first two who charged him, their spears lowered to skewer, then spun with enough force to bisect the spine of the third. Before his body hit the ground, the point of Rondal's mage blade was buried in the chest of a fourth, but there were more coming. He looked frantically around for his mount, which was beginning to shy away from the attack, demonstrating good sense. Rondal sprang back with an augmented leap and clambered into the saddle, just as Tyndall was ceremoniously leaping from his own saddle to tackle the shaman, sword in hand. Of course, the idiot was oblivious of the 6 or 7 other goblins rapidly closing in behind him. His horse was kicking at them, but defensively, not aggressively, and they were ignoring it in favor of the foolhardy knight. If Rondal didn't do something, the lad would be overwhelmed. While he briefly considered hanging back, and watching how his fellow responded to the challenge, he also knew that would not be good leadership. This was a fight, not a sparring match, and Tyndall was his rival, not his enemy. His stock of hung spells was dangerously low, but there were a few left. He recalled one from Raylan Cord that might break the foe's momentum, one developed for use in dispersing crowds during riots or peasant uprisings. An obnoxiously loud and sudden blast of sound, pressure, light, and magic that caused disorientation and loss of balance temporarily. It was called the Castigatics, and it didn't take much power, preparation time, or focus to release. He called the spells mnemonic, targeted the knot of knights and goblins in his mind, and spoke the command word. The effect was startling. The sudden noise and wave of chaotic sensory data caused all affected to spin around drunkenly as they lost their balance and flinched. Tyndall was in the thick of it, but was spared the brunt by the bodies of his foes. Still, he careened crazily as he slashed at the body of the shaman with his sword. Something clutched in his fist. Rondal rode quickly to where his fellow was and started taking apart disoriented Gavani skulls with meticulous precision while Tyndall struggled to get his boot in the stirrup. Rondal finally had to tuck his sword under his arm and steady his companion as he tried to right himself.
What in the name of Ishi's twat was that?
Demanded Tyndall.
castigatix?
First time I've used it, Rondo said, as he kicked at a goblin that was vomiting profusely on the corpse of his shaman. Castigatix was a nasty spell.
I like it.
Try being on the other side, Tyndall complained. It looked like his eyes were having a hard time focusing.
Let's go. They're regrouping.
Why did you tackle him like that? Rondell asked, a note of criticism in his voice.
The glass,
Tyndall grinned, holding up a bloody green stone between the fingertips of his riding gloves.
One more high mage for our side.
If we get back alive and intact, conceded Rondell, gruffly. He had to admit that acquiring Irianite was worth the risk. Every war mage and knight mage they could put on the field was a victory. He looked back at a few Gavanni archers preparing to fire.
Can you gallop?
No, but my horse can, Tyndall said lamely, as he blinked his eyes.
Just go, and he'll follow you.
They spurred their mounts and outpaced the feeble bowshots that tracked them, moving so fast they almost missed the copse of trees that Alwer and Belsey had taken refuge in. The two stumbled out after the knights had passed them, calling for them to wait. The reunion was brief. Neither commoner had killed the other while they were gone.
We had to move, my lord,
Alwer explained to him, as they continued down the road. The land is filled with those damned dogs of theirs, and they can smell a trail as well as any bloodhound. We shot two or three and escaped.
You did well,
agreed Rondell. He glanced at Belsey, who looked pale and frightened, her crossbow cocked and loaded.
You are unhurt?
She nodded, but didn't say anything else. She was trembling. Rondell's heart lurched for a moment when she would not meet his eye, but he pushed the feeling away. He had a mission to accomplish.
Back to Faerûn. I don't want to lead them back to Maramor.
Faerûn? Belsey asked, her eyes wide with concern.
Then one god's damned thing at a time, Rondell burst.
She finally met his eye, but only when it was her fate in jeopardy, he noted. He hardened his heart a bit, part of him disgusted at her self-interest. They may not be alive by dusk, and she was wondering about her inheritance, or even her charges. The foursome spurred their horses as fast as they could, pounding down the road until they had to slow to rest them. Alwer related a more detailed version of their fight and retreat, and Rondell assured him that he had done well. Tyndall was right. The man was a good, irregular fighter. Dusk fell as they neared Faerûn, and Rondell was beginning to feel hopeful that they might elude pursuit. Those hopes were dashed the moment he scried the area. There were clearly several goblins about, moving quickly, more quickly than a Gervan on foot. Fell hound cavalry, it had to be. They must want the boys awfully bad, after what they had done to Kefni Castle.
Back on the horses,
he ordered, only moments after they stopped. We have pursuit. The closest is less than a quarter mile away, to the southwest. We need to get going, and we do not stop moving until... One of the tinny-sounding horns the Gavanni used as an alarm sounded to the south, and another answered from the west.
Ah, three bloody hells, Tyndall said,
his face almost looking normal now. He drew his captured sword again.
That was close.
Ride,
Rondell yelled, as he jumped back in the saddle, slapping Belsey's mount on the hock as he did to encourage it along. The baying of the fellhounds could be heard echoing across the land. They continued to ride as fast as they could make the horses, already tired. They found new inspiration when another group of goblin cavalry spilled out onto the road only 100 yards behind them and began tearing after them. Arrows and javelin whisked past them. Most were wild shots fired in haste, but no less deadly if they found their mark.
I've got an idea, Tyndall sent to him as he brought up the rear. If they can chase us in relays, we can defend in relays.
What? What do you mean? Rondell replied, his hands holding the reins tightly.
I'll ride forward and prepare a defense. You ride past me while I hold them off. Just throw them a bit and give you a chance to ride ahead and prepare the next defense while the others ride past.
That's a decent plan, Rondell agreed.
Go ahead. I'll tell the others.
Rondell watched as Tyndall stood in the saddle, another goblin arrow passing harmlessly overhead, and urged his horse into an even faster gait. He spared a glance backwards, seeing the lead hound only 30 feet behind, and three more just behind him. Their vicious little riders were continuing to lob missiles at the horses, but they hadn't closed enough to employ their nasty blades. He really hoped this would work.
He didn't think their mounts could handle much more of this pace before one of them faltered. He said as much to Alwer and Belsey, as he watched Tyndall pull his reins and wheel his courser around, his hands instantly moving to draw forth a spell. As he passed by, he could feel the spell his comrade had built release. Something sharp seemed to cut the air. A blast of sound exploded at his back, making his ears ring and his head hurt. He could only imagine what it did to the sensitive ears of the hounds.
"Oh, well cast," he sent to Tyndall, without thinking about it.
"Thanks," Tyndall said, a note of surprise in his voice. "I figured that dogs don't like squeaky wagons and other high-pitched noises. They probably wouldn't like a sound strike spell."
"How did they react?"
"It brought us another 100 feet, Tyndall said, "but those bastards are still back there. I did my bit. Your turn." Rundle sighed and spurred his horse on with determination. Determination not to look bad in front of Tyndall. As his horse outpaced the others, he began thinking furiously about what he could do that would be effective against a pack of dogs. Sound, of course, as Tyndall had pointed out. But what other weaknesses did canines have? He had found a spot in the road at the top of a rise he felt would make a good stand, and he pulled his horse to a halt. The beast was grateful for the rest, but it wasn't unaware of the baying hounds that pursued, and it was reluctant to turn and face the threat. Rondel's mind raced through a variety of esoteric attacks, discarding one after the other until he came to one that seemed appropriate. Rondel began calling power and weaving the foundations of the spell the moment he decided, creating a swirling vortex of concentrated magical energy between his hands as his comrades thundered toward him. The goblins were almost 50 paces behind their prey at this point, thanks to Tyndall's spell. If Rondel could peel off another 50 with this attack, perhaps they could slip down some sidetrack and elude them. The ball of power grew, and when it reached a reasonable size, Rondel began shifting the mode of energy expressed within into something very specific. Ordinarily, this was a runic sigil, but the principle was easy enough to transfer to an area effect spell. As Alwer, bringing up the rear, galloped by him, Rondel stood in the stirrups and waited until the baying hounds and their wicked riders were only a few dozen feet away before he cast the spell. Suddenly, all 5 hounds skidded to a stop. Others were coming up behind, but the 5 closest were suddenly staring intently at Rondel and the sphere of power in his hand. That was how the spell began. The ball was designed to attract and keep someone's attention. Sometimes used as a defensive sigil to slow down infiltrators, in this iteration, the spell instead compelled the animals that saw it to watch the thing as if it were the most fascinating thing in the world. Rondel had often seen a dog drop everything to stare at an object in a man's hand. He was about to play the world's most dangerous game of fetch. To ensure the spell was fully effective, he shifted the ball to his left hand, and then to his right. 5 beady pairs of eyes followed it with intent interest. "Where's the ball?" Rondel asked gamely, while the goblin riders screamed and tugged on the fur of their mounts ineffectively. "Where's the ball, fellas?" He threw it back and forth, and the 5 hounds all began wagging their tails like puppies. He shifted it from his right hand back to his left, and when it returned, he hurled the sphere far to the left, down a gentle embankment and over a small drainage ditch. The 5 hounds took off after the phantom ball like it was an errant squirrel. It continued to captivate their attention in preference to all else, compelling them to chase after the phantom and completely ignore the commands of their riders. Even as he grinned at their outraged howls, the next batch of pursuers was closing. Rondel turned and spurred his horse on. 5 of them will be chasing their tails for a while," he sent to Tyndall. "How is our progress?" "The next crossroad is ahead," he answered. "The left fork leads back to Faroon Hall. I'm going to put a confounding spell to foil their tracking, and we can slink back to safety."
"Run!"
screamed Tyndall in his mind a moment later, just when he considered slowing his horse again.
"Shit! We're under attack! A damned patrol! 7 or 8 of them!"
Rondel screamed and spurred his horse faster and faster. Every foot of distance was vital, and seemed to take forever to cross. A patrol appearing like that was unlucky at best. At worst, it demonstrated the Gavanni's improving ability to coordinate. An infantry patrol appearing to shore up a cavalry chase suggested the latter. He could hear the yelps and barks of their comrades to both left and right of the road. If they didn't deal with the infantry patrol, they would be caught between them. Every second that passed could mean their deaths. When he arrived at the crossroads a moment later, Tyndall was slashing from horseback,
Balsie was desperately trying to reload her crossbow, and Alwer was on foot, his horse down and screaming in pain. The animal had been dropped by one of those vicious bolos the goblins had been employing against human cavalry. This one was made of iron chain, nastily barbed, and had taken the beast's hind legs down hard. Alwer had his long dagger in one hand and an axe in the other, and was giving good account of himself. Two bodies already lay at his feet, and he was dueling two more warriors. Ringing the crossroads were five or six other Gavanni tossing spears and shooting arrows, while a like number tried to attack the humans hand to hand. Rondal took the head of one of Alwer's attackers with his sword as he passed, and then, for good measure, he ploughed into the knot that Tyndall was fighting with his horse, his blade slashing with precision. As they were bowled over, both mounts began kicking and stomping on the aggressive little creatures. Horses, unlike dogs, were not particularly fond of Gavanni. Rondal heard a bowstring snap and saw Alwer's other attacker drop to Belsie's quarrel, and he shot her a grateful glance. Unfortunately, when he turned to face the next foe, another bowstring snapped. When he turned back a moment later, a black fletched arrow was protruding from Alwer's left eye socket, and a blank expression appeared in the other. Wordlessly, the big peasant collapsed to the ground, dead on the spot. Somewhere to his left, a goblin cheered at his good aim. That angered Tyndall. Before Rondal could react, the younger apprentice howled in fury and began waving his hands. A moment later, a wild, devastating blast of flame erupted among the scattered goblin archers, and most fell down screaming, their black fur afire.
"Damn them!" Tyndall screamed. "Alwer! He's dead!" Rondal called back sadly as he examined the body from horseback.
The shaft was just too deep. That point had to be far behind the man's eyeball and deep into his brain. Even if he was alive, he was in shock, and likely would not be for long. Nor would Rondal wish the kind of life he'd have left on an enemy. When the sight and smell of his bowels and bladder relaxing came, Rondal knew it was too late for the brave man. Alwer was dead. Tyndall was angrily slaying the last of the goblins, impaling one through the chest with a captured javelin, when Rondal looked back up at the sound of their cavalry's horns.
"They're still behind us! What happened?"
"The infantry got an ambush set up behind us," Tyndall said angrily.
"I didn't see it. Not until it was too late. They had those damned bolos. Alwer's horse was the only one they got, but..."
"Understood. Are you hurt, Arcella?" he asked automatically, forgetting the girl's actual name in the moment.
No,
she answered tearfully, staring down at Alwer's still quivering body.
"Then let's head for Faroon Hall and hope they don't figure it out."
"Hold," Tyndall said, wrinkling his nose. He carefully raised the point of his captured blade and quickly ended the wounded horse's suffering.
"Now we can go," he said heavily, taking one last look at Alwer's body.
Belsie nodded, ashen-faced, and started to turn her horse when she stopped.
"Wait. They're just dogs, right?"
Rondal shrugged.
"Yes, but I wouldn't want to take one of those puppies home to the kids. I have an idea," she said, digging around in her saddlebag.
It was the same one she'd packed from Faroon just a few days before.
"Demon pepper powder," she explained, carefully unwrapping the small bag. "It's as expensive as jewels, but every Regal Manor kitchen in Gilmora has some. That's why I took it," she confessed. "It's very, very powerful. Get some in your eye and you're blind."
She scattered the dust all around her feet.
"Any dog who sticks his nose in that won't be smelling anything else for a while."
The pungent, spicy aroma was potent enough so that Rondal's eyes were already watering.
"That was clever,"
he acknowledged with a bow of his head, nostrils flaring as he tried to avoid a sneeze.
"Now let's get the hells out of here."
The last leg to Faroon Hall was frantic, as the three humans tried to outdistance their pursuers while keeping watch for additional patrols. While they continued to hear baying hounds and tinny horns in the distance, scrying and scouting kept them from encountering any more searchers, and they made it to the roadway leading to their refuge without further incident.